I'm 6 foot tall, made of solid gold. I have a special thing for JavaScript, and my CTO is a cat.
This is the Meteor Club Podcast, a weekly roundtable discussion about all things Meteor.
Welcome to Meteor Club Podcast. I am your host, Josh Owens, along with my co-host,
Benjamin Strahan.
Benjamin? I've never called you Benjamin. You prefer Benjamin?
I don't.
It's all about the Benjamin?
It was all about epicness right now. But it didn't come out too
epic. If you want to be epic, you got to grow your beard longer. Of course, we haven't put out any video of this, so I guess no one knows yet. All right, so... this week we have two special guests with us. Why don't you do the intro there, Ben?
Yo, we have Ryan Glover from Chicago, representing Chicago with me. He is the Meteor Chef, if you guys don't know it. And so he rocks tutorials, and he built this awesome job board. Jobs at .meteorchef.com, right?
Yes.
Nice. Right on. Ryan, give us like 10 seconds telling us some other awesome stuff about you, man.
I'm 6 foot tall, made of solid gold. I have a special thing for JavaScript, and my CTO is a cat.
Right on. Well, thanks for joining us, Ryan. And we got Nate Strauss. Did I screw up that last name?
You did.
Strauss.
Nate, thanks for joining us, man. So Nate is like the first guy that ever had a production Meteor app, and he runs WeWork Meteor. So like we had to pay him $5,000 to do this show because it's so popular. So we appreciate the discount. That $8,000 first quote was ridiculous. But tell us a little bit about yourself, man.
Okay, so I've been using Meteor since late in 2012. Build products for startups. I do consulting work. I do some mentoring work. I've been doing web development professionally since 2005, worked at Lockheed Martin for a number of years, and been around the block in terms of technology. Pretty much fell in love with Meteor since I saw it, and haven't turned back.
Right on. Nice. Well, thanks for joining us today, man.
Thanks for having me.
Yeah, so there was a lot of shifting and discussion about what we talk about, but obviously, like, I wanted you two guys on because there's two job boards, and I thought we could talk about that a little bit. Actually, we'll have a little dance off at the end. But no, seriously though, I'm getting quite a few emails, and people are like, you know, I'm thinking about learning Meteor, and you know, I want to do some cool stuff with it, but I just don't know. Is there a jobs market there? Like, will I be able to find a job once I learn it? And I still think it's early days, and so I thought we could talk a little bit about, you know, what you guys think needs to happen in order to grow this jobs market and get it to a place where people that want to find work can find work if they're a good quality programmer, I guess.
Yeah, and I want to talk about a little bit about like the growth that you guys see in the job market, and I'm sure you guys talk with people all the time, and they're asking you, and so you guys got like the finger on the pulse.
Yeah, definitely. And then we thought for the second half, we'd discuss packages. So I think that could be good as well, because that's probably another big point of confusion a lot of people find when they come into the community. They're like, well, I don't know which package to use, right? Like, I see multiple kind of packages that would handle this. Which one's the best one? And so we can talk a little bit about that as well. I don't know. Maybe we'll even get meta and talk about, you know, what makes a package good and that kind of thing. All right. Yeah. So I guess we'll just start off with like what we'll start with Nate, because he had the first job board. Like, what drove you to put that job board up, and you know, maybe even like what kind of growth you've seen on it so far?
Okay. So WeWork Meteor launched in February of 2013. And you know, I made it out of somewhat of frustration when I was in a hiring position and looking for a Meteor developer and really couldn't find anybody. This was kind of late or
I can't hear you there.
Oh, no?
Yeah, I hear you okay now.
Okay. So out of it kind of grew out of frustration of when I was in a hiring position at my last startup that we couldn't find any Meteor developers and there wasn't really kind of a cohesive place to go to like post a job. You know, we ended up finding people over Twitter, but it was, you know, a little bit difficult and there wasn't really kind of a dedicated place and Meteor was still really new at that time. So there wasn't even like a way to, you know, go on you know, like Dice or something and say, we're find Meteor people on there. Of course you could list it as a skill, but it wasn't something a lot of people even knew about. So I kind of recognized it as sort of a need within the community at that time and thought that, you know, that I wanted to do just a little bit more than just a straight job board, that I wanted to have a little bit of kind of a community feel as well, that developers could have profiles and we could kind of match the two of them eventually, create something that's a little bit more, a little bit different than other job boards that are solely single focused. So I spent a weekend and whipped up WeWork Meteor, and it's actually an open source product as well that in the past year we've gotten a couple forks that run for different communities. So, you know, I think it's gone pretty well, and, you know, we're seeing quite a bit of growth. I'm getting around, let's see, let's look in Google Metrics here or Google Analytics. I'm doing around 6,000 users a week hitting it, and we're averaging about, you know, it kind of fluctuates per week, like how many jobs get posted. I think that it's somewhere between 2 and 6 per week that get posted. You know, and not all of them are like legitimate full-time positions. A lot of them are, you know, little tiny consulting gigs or like a little mentoring or somebody has a little problem. So it's a little bit different scope than, you know, a more traditional kind of employment focused job board. So I launched it in I had the year wrong there. I launched it in February of 2014 and I redesigned the site. It kind of sat just looking like a plain bootstrap site that was really plain for a year. Had a lot of people actually using it and got pretty good inertia behind it. Initially I had to kind of go out and scrape for jobs in different spots and I'd pull them off of Odesk or Elance and repost them here off of AngelList just to get something that there was a cohesive place that you could go to look for Meteor employment. And I redesigned the site in February of this year, right around the 1 year anniversary. And we've had pretty good growth since then. I didn't really add too many new features. It just kind of got a better look to it and looks a little more polished that people can upload photos and things like that now. So yeah, that's been the progression for WeWork Meteor.
Very cool.
Yeah, that's pretty good actually, because I think I'm doing about 7,500 a week on Crater. So seems like you're getting a lot of eyeballs on WeWork Meteor there.
Mm-hmm. And it's free to use. So like anyone could upload anything, respond to stuff, right?
Yeah. So anybody can create a profile that's not actually monitored or having any kind of disposition process behind it currently. The jobs I do personally review and approve every single one. I get a lot of, or not a lot, but a fair amount of sort of like recruiter spam that isn't really applicable or is like for like a Rails job and they don't even bother to read that, you know, what this is for. So it's mainly just to keep out the stuff that's not applicable. You're right. There's no charging for job postings currently. I had been planning to charge for postings, and I may still do that at some point in the future. I guess at this point it's not. I guess I kind of view this as like a service to the community for me that I don't really need to make money on. It doesn't cost a lot to run. So I just do a little bit of kind of donated time to make it happen. I think that I may put in a paywall at some point in the future for postings, but I do still want, like, you know, I think that there's still a need for, like, maybe I have like a little tiny project that I don't want to pay like $100 for. So maybe there's, you know, similar to what Ryan did with the jobs on the Meteor Chef, that there's like different price tiers, or I may still have a free tier at some point in the future. I'm not in a rush to turn it to be paid. You know, I'm more concerned about like inertia and growth and doing something good for the community through it at this point. But yeah, definitely free for now.
And Ryan, so you're a smart guy. I know, I'd like you.
Yeah.
What did you see? What was the unique opportunity that you saw that made you want to like start your own board? And you did a great job with it. Both of you guys, I'm really impressed with both of the things that you guys put out. But tell us a little bit, Ryan, like the backstory.
Good question. So the real motivation behind it was, I have all this traffic coming to the Meteor Chef, and I started getting a lot of emails about like, okay, you've taught me how to do this stuff with Meteor, but now what do I do with it? Every so often you'll get somebody who's really motivated and likes to build their own stuff, but a lot of people just look for, I want to learn these skills so I can go out and get a job. And so the initial motivation behind all this was like, oh, wow, okay, people are looking for jobs. So it just seemed like a logical next step to say, like, okay, let's add a job board to the site, something that, after you read one of the recipes or something like that and work through the code and get comfortable with it, you can say, okay, now I feel confident. I can go out and look for a job. And so I guess the big difference between WeWork Meteor and the Meteor Chef jobs right now are for hire is, like Nate was saying, I asked for money for this. And the real motivation isn't to make money off of this. I never kind of intended it for that. But more so to act as a natural filter to the types of jobs being posted. So kind of the bigger question here is, where is Meteor headed and where is it going? And I want to try and encourage with this, and it seems to be working to some extent. I've had, a handful of decent profile jobs posted to the site, is starting to attract bigger companies and more serious opportunities where somebody can go get a full-time job doing this. So not just, helping somebody with a side project or, a part-time thing, or maybe working at a startup, but, bigger established companies and making sure that there's access to those type of jobs. And kind of the nature of how this thing is organized is, a bigger business is going to say, okay, well, I'm being charged money for this, so I expect a certain level of service and a certain level of quality. And I guess the goal of the site is to try and provide that different avenue, not necessarily, saying like, Nate is wrong. I love WeWork Meteor and I think it's great. But just a kind of a different avenue for those types of jobs.
Right. Right. Yeah. Interesting. I like it. I like it. Do you guys like each other?
I hate Nate. I send Nate hate mail.
Yeah. I mean, I think that there's, while we may be in the same domain, I don't really think that we're direct competitors or that it's like a zero sum game. I don't think that we're like stealing from each other, and it's definitely not solely because like I'm not charging and the for hire is. I think that is a natural filter. And there's, you look at other communities like the Angular community, and there's tons and tons of job boards, and most of them charge, and some of them charge outrageous fees.
Yeah.
There's kind of this whole spectrum of a job board that can be anywhere from like Craigslist to something like Angular JS Jobs, which is almost like a recruiting service that they take, I want to say it's 20% of the salary of the hire. For the fee you've got this whole spectrum of services that can be offered for employment.
Interesting.
Yeah, it was funny. I was actually talking to Sam about it because with the Meteor Club Slack chat room, I feel like we're getting a lot of people that come in and like level up, and then they're like, hey, I want a job. And we were joking the other day, like in private message, he was telling me I should start a recruiting agency basically. And I was like, I don't know, that sounds terrible to me.
Announced here, a third person in the job and market.
No, not happening. I've got a 50% success rate, right? Because I helped you get a job, but I haven't helped anyone else get a job yet.
Yeah, big shout out, my first week at OKGrow. Love the guys.
Congratulations.
Yeah, it's awesome. And then I'm stationed here at 1871 in Chicago. So if anyone want to like go out and party and all stuff or hang out, come on by, man. They got free food in the afternoon. So,
I guess my question would be like, what are you guys seeing growth wise? I mean, obviously you're getting a lot of traffic there, Nate, but like, do you guys track like how many jobs per week are getting posted and, like how many are getting fulfilled by your service or anything like that?
No, I mean I've got significantly less traffic than Nate does. I'm still kind of in the hundreds of people a week, and I mean the job board isn't getting a lot of postings. I mean, it's gotten more than I expected, honestly, since it launched at the end of February. It's got had 6 total and 5 active ones right now. So it's picking up though. It's definitely like jobs are being added, and you're starting to see a lot of people start to ask about it. Like bigger businesses are saying like, okay, well, there's obviously an opportunity here. So, you know, let's start, you know, trying to get developers around this. But a lot of it isn't necessarily Meteor specifically. It's more like Meteor as part of your tool belt. So it's like, we do a lot of JavaScript development, but we'd also like to see some Meteor skills. And so you get a lot of jobs like that. I don't know. How about you, Nate?
So I don't really have any way currently to kind of track what happens to these positions. And I think, you know, I had been kind of thinking about introducing, you know, almost like a real estate kind of model that if it was hired, that instead of somebody actually deleting it, that instead of, you know, like a house that says sold, that it would say hired, and kind of track it from that mechanism. So it's tough for me to say, you know, what the success rate of positions being filled is. You know, I get a fair amount of them. Like in the past month, there's been 10 that people have deleted. Whether that means they filled them or they don't want it anymore, it's kind of hard to say. So I don't really have great metrics around.
You should add like as part of the delete process, like they have to put in why, like we filled position or.
Yeah, and that's what I was kind of thinking is like a soft delete sort of functionality that wouldn't actually remove it. Because right now it's very rooted, you know, like I said, I built this in a weekend, like, you know, a year ago, and then probably spent another 3 days back in February on it revamping the UI. So it's been fairly minimal in terms of the amount of time I've devoted to it. So it's a little lean in certain kind of key areas that, you know, if this was like a legitimate business, that would be a lot more important to track.
Yeah.
Back in the day, I posted a job on your board. And man, I had a bunch of like overseas agencies contact me, you know, like the broken English kind of stuff. And it was about 40% of the stuff. And the other ones were like, I was pretty impressed. I had no idea that some of the guys applying for jobs. So it was like a mixed bag. Do you hear that kind of feedback?
I do. I do get feedback that, not so much that it's, you know, like overseas shops, but that there's, you know, the people will get a lot of candidates that are like fresh out of like a boot camp, which isn't necessarily bad depending on your need. I think it goes to, you know, sort of the state of the Meteor developer community, that there's not, you know, it's not on the same scale as like Angular or Rails, that there's thousands and thousands of like really qualified developers that know what they're doing. So, you know, I think we're, and likewise, you know, even if you did post like a job for a more established framework, you're probably going to get kind of the same low quality responses that from firms and individuals that don't really fit very well. So yeah, I've heard that it's sort of a mixed bag of the type of responses you get.
But honestly, that's probably true of any job site, right? I mean, once you post an email address, like people are going to scan that and try to figure out if they can capture a client off of that, at least for, you know, the low end kind of overseas services. And, you know, the other interesting thing too is a lot of times, like I don't even have a profile on WeWork Meteor and I haven't had a job come in that way, right? Obviously, since I don't have a profile, but you know, all my jobs are like word of mouth, or like people will email me like, hey, I need help with this. And I'll be like, okay, like here's my short-term rate, long-term rate. Like how much help do you need? But I don't know. Yeah, I still think it's like way early days for this. And I don't know. It's pretty awesome that we have two of them. I love that.
Yeah.
So I, on the Telescope Slack group, Sasha has a jobs channel. And so I jumped in there this morning and I asked the whole channel what they saw with the job market and everything. And I had some interesting responses. And this one dude, Andres, he was telling me, remember that plugin that someone had, that Chrome plugin that would tell you when there was like a Meteor website?
Oh, yeah.
What was that thing again? Built with Meteor?
Meteor like spotting.
Yeah.
The anyway, one that would out your like staging sites and your super secret production sites before you meant to.
Yeah. You're like, oh shit. But anyway, he was saying that he just like went out and contacted some of those shops or some of those websites. And he's like this, and that was back at like version, he said he got involved at like version 0.6. And then it just has been gangbusters for him. He doesn't even need to be looking for work anymore. And things just keep on coming. And Sasha brought up a pretty good thing that like the jobs for Telescope is growing. And he's seen a big jump just recently in it. So I feel like we're all of a sudden there's all this velocity starting up, at least like at this, while it's coming the first quarter of this year. So do you guys like see that, Nate? Do you like see a jump?
Yeah, I mean, since I've seen a very significant and kind of steady growth since the 1.0 release. Right around 1.0, I got a nice big bump in both jobs being posted and, you know, like my personal influx of leads and people contacting me. And since the new year, it's even gotten more, and it just doesn't seem like it's slowing down at all. So I definitely agree with that there's, you know, over the past like 18 months, there's been this nice steady progression that really took off at 1.0.
Nice. And then Josh, you're seeing like a bump in people contacting you saying, hey, we're looking for senior consulting and things like that, right?
I wouldn't say a bump necessarily. I find, you know, I had a very specific vision in mind when I broke away from Differential. I thought that training and open source work was the way to get quality client leads. And so I still find that that's where a lot of the leads that I have right now have come out of people that have taken the training class. And then they're like, hey, we want to go deeper and hire you and that kind of thing. So that's kind of where I'm at now. Like my current client, Classic, they hired me to come do an in-person training shop. And then while I was there, we started having a discussion about the project that they were getting ready to take on. And they brought me in on that. And so I've been working on that since January. But yeah, I don't know. You know, the other interesting thing too is this is a good way for you guys to maybe see all the job leads first and cherry pick the interesting ones. I don't know. Are you doing that?
I'm not anymore. I did for a long time.
And now they're never going to come back, Josh.
No, well, you know, I did. And I think it worked fairly well. I got a number of clients that were like short-term engagements from that. And it kind of speaks pretty strongly when I'm like, hey, you posted this on my job board that I made. So I know what I'm doing.
I can at least get it in production, right?
Yeah, yeah.
You didn't change your name at least?
Like, no, I wanted to like, you know, make that more important that like you put it on my site and it's built with Meteor and you see my name at the bottom.
Nate Strouser's WeWorkMeteor.com.
Yeah. Yeah. Before I approve this and put it out in the public.
Well, actually it was the other way around. You know, it was actually before approval processes that I went in and would, you know, email people a lot. And at this point I'm booked out a little far with work and have people that contact me. So I haven't had to do that, but I definitely did.
What about you, Ryan? Are you cherry picking jobs off your job postings?
Every single day. No, actually a lot of the work, there's only been one, I do a lot of freelance work and there's only been one guy and I talked to him a little bit, but he reached out to me directly, but everything else has been full time. So not in my ballpark, but you talked about something, Josh, a second ago, which was how to get jobs. And I'm guessing you get a lot of stuff just because you're working on Meteor stuff. You know, you're writing, you're releasing open source projects, you're doing that stuff. And that's something important for developers to keep in mind is like job boards are important. You know, you'll find stuff and you'll find people looking for work, but you to some extent, you got to put yourself out there and make sure that you're you know, demonstrating that you actually know how to build Meteor stuff. Like Nate was talking about, you know, he built this job board, so he's showing people like, hey, I know how to actually do this. You know, it's not enough to just say like, put Meteor developer on my resume and expect people to hire me. You know, you gotta do stuff that brings people to you. And a lot of it is silly stuff. Like, you know, you find something cool you like to do, write a tutorial about it. Come up with a new, you know, concept of doing something, write a package. You know, make sure that your name and your work is being put out there, because that's the sort of stuff, at least in my, kind of world, is people have gotten in touch with me just because they're like, oh, I read this article. And it's a surprise at first, but you can get a lot of work from that. And similar to Nate, it's like, you know, your work queue will fill up very quickly if you're out there and you're doing stuff.
Yeah, that is interesting.
So like we can talk now towards the guy who's looking for a job right now. And like you touched on like some golden stuff right there. And that's the same like with when I got started in this and just reaching out to Josh and being like, yo, can I like do a guest article on your blog? And man, it just like, boom, took off from there and just kept on going. And I think that was like a huge part in me just getting hired and getting my name out there. And the cool thing is Meteor is still pretty young. Like it's pretty easy to get your name out there right now and kind of be heard by the community.
Or hard. I was looking at a Reddit thread the other day and some guy took a posting from my mailing list and he's like, it's, you know, I was talking about jQuery and how you need to know it a little bit to work with event maps and that kind of thing. And he just took it directly from the newsletter and pasted it in. And then some guy in the Reddit comments was like, who's this Josh Owens guy? I've never heard of him. And I was like, you're in the Meteor Reddit forum. How have you not heard of me? And I thought it was kind of funny. But no, I mean, like, yeah, in all seriousness, like what kinds of things would you guys suggest doing? Besides maybe like Ben just mentioned blogging, but what would you do or what would you advise people do to get noticed?
I mean, a big one that would be very cool and just helpful to the community as a whole is, you know, find a Meteor meetup in your city or your town or whatever, or if there isn't one, start one and go out and give talks and start getting people excited about this stuff, because there's a difference between like writing something and saying like, this is awesome, and getting in front of a room of people and not just like talking about it, but showing them like on a projector, like, hey, this is why this is so cool, and this is the type of stuff you can build, and just starting those sort of organic conversations, because it's, you know, you just gotta get out there. Like you gotta be a personality in the community that people can not only look up to, but somebody they can trust. And that kind of leads back to the work thing. It's like when you're visible, people will trust you more. Because, you know, you're kind of putting your name on the line. You know, it's like Josh has his name over everything, and there's a reason for that. It's because he knows his shit. Am I allowed to cuss? Yeah.
We'll bleep it.
Right, like he wouldn't be doing that if he didn't know his stuff. And you know, that not to say that like if you're just getting started, don't do it. Still do it. Like make sure it's like as you progress and as you learn, show people that and teach them. And that will allow you to get a lot more interest around you and people wanting to hire you.
Yeah, I would agree with that. Like it's very much the Gary Vaynerchuk model, right? Like if you listen to recent stuff, he's like, you know, people ask me, how do I have the nerve or the audacity or whatever to like dispense this advice? And he talks about, you know, he had 10 years of his career where he was just heads down, like in all this stuff and doing it and kind of building up this knowledge base that he's pulling from. And I kind of feel like the same way, right? Like there was 10 years where I was kind of blogging, but mostly just working on client projects and that kind of thing. I'm sure that's similar to Nate's story as well.
Yeah. Yeah. I mean, I think that, I guess my advice would be to like build something, you know, build something with Meteor that is in some way novel. That's kind of an interesting project. And if possible, make it open source that other people can learn from it. And even better, if there's something that you do novel in that application that you can extract to a package and you can share with the community, I feel like those are probably the biggest things to credibility of, here's a website that I built that maybe is not even popular, but is novel and interesting, and it actually runs and doesn't, you know, crash your browser kind of thing. And that, you know, if you can find something that's novel to share back to the community, which there's still a lot of opportunity for even somewhat simplistic packages that are integrations with different APIs or wrappers around things that other people will use, and that gets your name out there around it. You know enough. I mean, if you know enough to write a package that other people use, that's pretty high up in terms of, like, you know, your skill level in the Meteor community. I think that, you know, that would be my advice. I think to just build things, play with things, and try to have it be open source if you can.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, definitely.
I think a good thing that stands out as well on all three of you guys is you guys take it serious. Whatever you guys put out, and I know especially Ryan, like, you guys aim to be impeccable. And Josh, your big thing is follow through and consistency. And Ryan, every time you gave a talk at our meetup, it was like a million miles better, or just a million miles away from the next talk. And just the effort and the work that you put into even like the slides and everything. And I really think that then those things, doing that extra step, really sets someone apart. Would you guys agree? Like, you guys are like, now all of a sudden you're like at expert level.
So, like, I'll jump in here and just say, I don't think you have to be impeccable. I think it just takes, for me, it's a consistent effort, right? And so it's like the tortoise and the hare, right? So you can sprint and do, you know, a couple of days on something and churn out something that's mildly interesting to people, but then come back to it, you know, a week later, 2 weeks later, and work on it a little bit more and a little bit more. And it doesn't have to be like every day effort. I think if you do like even just a half hour every day, you're gonna see loads of improvement. But to me, yeah, it's very much like, well, like this podcast, for instance, right? Like, each time we do it, we're getting a little bit better. And like, I'm also working with Colby and doing the apprentice series, and we're getting the website polished up and ready to go for this thing. And so we're using Simplecast, but, you know, even once a week working on this, I think we'll have this thing out by, like, you know, in a week or two, probably by the time this episode comes out, you know, this thing will have a website at podcast.meteorjs.club. So that's my take on it.
Nice. So little by little, but being consistent is a big thing.
Yeah.
Just put time into your stuff. You know, like, it's, you can't expect to put in like an hour and get like, you know, $100,000 a year job. Like, you have to show people that not only do you know how to do this stuff, but that you care, you know, because if somebody's going to hire you, especially like smaller companies and smaller teams, like, if they're putting, you know, some sizable amount of money, you know, a couple thousand dollars into you, either as a freelancer or just as a new hire, it's like, they should feel good about that. Like, you should show them, like, okay, I'm going to put the work in. I'm going to put the effort in. I'm going to put the time in. And if you're not demonstrating that in your own projects, what's leaving them to guess or know that you will actually do that for them, right? Like, if you don't show it, nobody's going to know. It's kind of like seeing is believing with this stuff.
Nice.
So what do you guys think about, I guess we'll switch it around a little bit. What do you guys think about like technical interviews or doing like coding challenges live in front of people? Have you had to do that before, Nate?
Yes, and generally I hate it. so, you know, I think that there's, well, I mean, if we talk, you know, abstractly about like interviewing programmers in general, I think that there's, it's definitely valid to give somebody a problem that has like some little quirks to it that you want to see how they think. I absolutely hate it when the answer depends on some esoteric thing that I don't remember, like, you know, traversing a doubly linked list in like one go, or some specific thing that somebody picked up out of like a computer science book or like an interview questions book or website, and it's just, if you don't know that exact thing, then you don't know it and you seem like an idiot. But you you know, and it's kind of tough when, you know, you might pass over candidates that have the right skills that you're looking for just because they didn't know that answer, that particular answer. So I think that, you know, there's definitely some sort of style to it of, I want to see how people think. And I definitely agree, when I've been in a hiring position with doing kind of live coding exercises, but I definitely go towards, you know, hidden tricks in a simple problem that I want to see if you catch things, not did you remember this particular day of CompSci 301?
Did you remember this stupid JavaScript bug that they've left in there for years?
Yeah.
Yeah. So I would tend to agree with that. Like, I've never found that to be a pleasant experience. I think you're kind of in the same boat, Ben, right? Like, you were interviewing with OK Grow, and I remember you saying you had like some kind of interview with them, and you're like, I feel like I didn't do very well. Maybe I bombed, but then here you are, you know, hired by them, right?
I don't remember that. I remember saying, man, this is so easy.
You just aced it.
Dang. Uh-huh. For the win.
Sure, sure, man.
No, I mean, this was, for people who don't know, I kind of switched industries. So I come from a commercial construction background, and every single big building in Chicago, I was part of designing that and the engineering behind it, pretty much like Trump Tower, all the sports places, everything. So, but, yeah, anyway, so
I don't believe you.
You don't?
No, not at all.
If you ever show up and like one of the buildings has a leaky window, then you're like, oh, I believe Ben now. Surely he designed this, but no. That was like a big thing of anxiety for me when interviewing is the live coding and everything. Since it was new to me and in this industry, I didn't know exactly what they were looking for or what to get out of it. But Nate, what you kind of said, it's even a switch for the developer who's interviewing with the company. Like, this is a good way to see the people that you're going to be working with or how they present problems to you and how you guys work together on stuff. So if you got someone who's doing like some esoteric thing with you, you know, that should be a little bit of a flag. But if there's someone who sits down with you and wants to figure out how you think about something, you know, that's a great sign for that company. At least that's how I took it.
Yeah. I mean, I always think that, you know, what are you more concerned with? You're more concerned that somebody can actually build a real world product. And, you know, if you can, does it have to be like the most efficient solution that's the right answer to build real world products? And usually no, usually it's that, you know, you have to kind of think around the edges of things and maybe, you know, computing power is pretty cheap. So if something takes twice as long and it's not, you know, like a mission critical part of the application that has to be very performant, then so what? So I think that there's, you know, you lose a lot of good candidates from that perspective if you're kind of concerned too much about the right answer.
Yeah. Yeah. I mean, that's a very valid point, right? So I remember interviewing, with a company called Outright, which had just been purchased by GoDaddy. And I worked there for a year, a couple of years back. And I remember going through a series of three coding interviews, right? And the very first one, you know, I got done and I said, you know, how'd I do? And it was like a backbone kind of coding challenge with the front end guy. And he's like, oh, you totally bombed that. And I was like, oh, that's a bummer. But they still hired me in the end because I had two other interviews and the back end guy really liked the work that I did. And ultimately, like, the thing that I was working on had nothing to do with Backbone. You know, it had to do with, they were, you know, doing nightly sync jobs with banks to get, like all your records out of there and sync it into their bookkeeping app. And, you know, it was taking over 24 hours to finish this queue of 100,000 jobs. And,
yeah, that's why I didn't use Outright.
Yeah. Yeah.
I remember.
I was there.
That was a sucky sinking.
It really was when I got
there. It was. I'm serious.
Really, really bad.
I remember
the day, but you know, my job was just to speed that up. And by the time I left, we were running the sync jobs like twice a day and getting through it with time to spare. So, I mean, there's always time to optimize that stuff, right? And so early on, they were in this growth phase and trying to figure out how to get users in. But then at a certain point, they started caring about what's it cost to host all those users? You know, can we drop that cost? And syncing was a big part of that. And so, you know, there's always time to go back and optimize the things that are going to be a problem later. Mm-hmm. Very valid.
Yeah. Ryan, we know that you love those coding challenges, right?
I despise that stuff. I mean, it's Nate talked about this, and Josh, you mentioned it earlier. It's, you know, I would much rather work with somebody who I knew was motivated to build their own stuff, because a lot of this, as long as you understand the fundamentals of a language or a framework or something, it's like you get to a point where it's just style. You know, it's that company or that group of people have a way of writing code, which can be taught to someone. So it's, you know, when you're getting into like really nitpicky, like performance stuff, it's kind of like, well, okay, you can teach me that. Like, you don't need to be a jerk about it in an interview. Just kind of say like, hey, here's this technique, try it. And if they don't get it, then just like, oh, well, here's how we do it. Here's why we do it. And then you move on. Like, it doesn't need to be, you know, a disqualification if somebody doesn't know some like really obscure thing, because it's ridiculous. So it's like, you know, hire people because they're motivated to do stuff and they're actually building things and they're trying to do this stuff, not just because they, you know, are pedantic about some book, you know, like they can actually do the thing. Because when it comes down to it, it's like, I would much rather sit next to somebody who's going to spend the extra, you know, 8 to 10 hours to fix something, rather than the guy's going to be like, well, we have to fix it this way. And if we don't fix it that way, then you're stupid. Like that sucks.
So, I like how you use pedantic. That's a pretty cool word. I don't know.
It is a cool word. It means overly attentive to the definition or the book definition, or how it's written down.
I'm going to try and use that for the next 5 days, at least once a day.
Nice. Oh, here comes the train. Hey, train guy.
And our sponsor is here, Josh's Train.
Pacific, I don't even know the names of the train companies. I was going to say one, but...
The yellow one.
Yeah. The one that blows his horn a lot. All right. So I said we were going to get to another topic. So let's switch to that. Let's talk about packages. Maybe a good segue, right? Since we were talking about people doing open source work. And I think finding popular packages and helping them fix bugs could be a great way to get your name out there. Mm-hmm. So maybe let's start by talking about, like, how do you guys evaluate a package and how do you decide when you're going to use that package over another package?
That's a good question.
Yeah.
I guess, yeah, one thing I look at is how much activity is going on around it. So, like, if you look on Atmosphere, like, there's obviously, like, the kind of, what is the word?
Sparkline.
Yeah.
That shows, like, okay, there's people installing this and there's activity. And, like, one thing I check always when I look at a package, aside from just that, is the history. So, like, over in the bottom right, there's, like, a little pod, and it shows you how many versions of been released over what time and just stuff like that. Like, is it active? Is it being developed? And are people actually using this thing?
Mm-hmm. I mean, I think that there's, we're not like a Linux package manager here where you want like a text editor and there's like 100 to choose from. We're not there yet. So I think if you're looking for, let's say you're looking for like a job queue processor or some kind of like something to do with cron, there's not that many to pick from. You're not sort of overwhelmed by choice. So I think some of the strategies that Rye's describing, I use those too. I tend to check out like GitHub issues as well. See if there's, you know, something that seems like it's severe that is not being addressed, or people complaining that things aren't being fixed. You know, just because there's a bug with it though, or there's even multiple bugs. I mean, look at Iron Router, and like everybody uses it, and there's got to be 200 open bugs on it. But that doesn't mean that it's not a great package to use. So it's, you know, it's sort of like a little bit of investigative work to see how you feel about it. You know, if you get into, let's say you wanted to do like something like subscriptions caching, you know, there's two, maybe there's more now. There's one, the one for Meteor Hacks, Subs Manager, and then there's one from that does like subs cache, which is just slightly different. And, you know, a lot of times packages that are, you know, if you take a little bit of time and like read the descriptions for them, if they're similar, a lot of times they'll even refer to each other. Like the Subs Cache one talks about how it's different from Subs Manager and like some of the different strategies that they use for caching your subscription. So you can make a pretty informed decision once you know what you want. A larger problem is like, you know, if I have a problem, how do I find if I have a problem that I don't know what I'm looking for, like, how do I find the right package for that? You know, if I know I want a subs cacher or I want something cron, then I can find stuff and I can research and I can pick. But package discovery is kind of a separate problem that is much harder to crack around finding the right thing for your problem.
Yeah, and Avisphere tries to solve this, I think, but...
with their great search bar.
Yeah. But with their slow search bar. We should all get in the open source version and fix it. Ooh, we can't.
Oh, yeah.
Oops. Well, all right, anyway. In reality, I think maybe part of this is a documentation problem, right? And that's another thing that I tend to look at when I first evaluate a package is like, how good is the documentation? I pretty much immediately discount anything that doesn't have a GitHub link and a README in Atmosphere.
README for this package.
Yeah, that's just totally out the window. And then, you know, and I think if someone does a really stand-up job at documentation with screenshots and that kind of thing, that's usually a sign that they care enough about their package and that it's probably going to be at least decent quality and they're going to be open to maybe fixing it when you do hit bugs. And so I usually preference that stuff kind of higher.
Right on.
All right.
So favorite packages.
Yeah, dude, you read my mind.
Well, Ben, since you were going to say something, what's your top three?
Three, good Lord.
Top three, holy shit.
Go ahead, take your time.
Wait. Yeah. I'm gonna say
so I like all the icon packages. Yeah.
Those icon packages. See, I don't even know what that is.
I'll go first. I'll say Mongol, Ionic, and I don't know about the third one. I guess user accounts, right? Because it's superseded account sentry. Yeah, Meteoric, Ionic, Meteoric.
Already screwing up, Josh. I really like collection hooks and collection helpers.
Ooh.
Okay. Yep. So they should just merge. They should just be one.
You think so?
Yeah,
it's pretty different to me.
Yeah,
they are, but I don't. I've never found an instance where I don't put them both in.
I use hooks all the time. No helpers.
Really?
That's interesting.
Yeah. I do. I typically find for helpers or for collection helpers that, I guess it's useful for like the use case of like looking up a linked object like a post and find the author. But I don't really like to, I feel like how they kind of present it is that it's good for like virtual fields of like, I'm going to, you know, concatenate a first name and a last name into a full name or something like that. Mm-hmm. And, you know, I've run into performance difficulties over and over again with doing computations, rendering lots of data on the page. So I'm a pretty big fan of like very heavy denormalization and like mm-hmm. calculation routines. So I use hooks to do denormalization, you know, like putting a blog, the author's name on the blog post, like that kind of thing. And also cascading changes from like a profile update that they change their name. So mm-hmm. I use them a lot and have hardly ever used collection helpers.
That's interesting.
That is interesting. That's what I always wait for denormalization if I really have to, because it kind of scares me. And especially since it's the stuff I've been working on, it's like highly relational. Mm-hmm. So helpers was huge on that. But I was just starting to get into hooks even more deeply to do the denormalization, and it really wasn't as painful as I made it mm-hmm. out to
me. No, it's what I like about it is that you can sort of encapsulate where the sort of knowledge of what has to be denormalized is into those mm-hmm. hooks that. Yep. When you have a profile screen that somebody changes their name, you don't care where it goes. You have a separate method that listens to that and propagates that change. So it does a very nice kind of compartmentalization of sort of schema awareness.
Mm-hmm. Oh, and that's my other stuff. I love the auto forms and simple schema, and people are going to be like, what? Because it's 50-50. And Josh is like,
I hate that crap, man.
Josh is like, man. I have my own form. You should use mine.
Yeah. But I do a bad job at documentation, so clearly I don't care that much.
Well, that's why I just didn't install yours ever.
Yeah. Thanks. Pull request welcome, jerk.
So and next week's co-host is Ryan Clover.
I'm a big fan of AutoForm Collection 2 and Simple Schema also. And that's, you know, that's actually part of the reason that I built WeWork Meteor was that I wanted to experiment with those packages. They had just kind of been around long enough. So it was the first app that I built with them. And I really haven't looked back because I don't like making forms. I mean, there's pain points for sure, especially around like auto values and custom validations. How it integrates with like collection hooks is kind of nasty for like the before triggers. But overall, I really like the idea of it, of defining a schema once, and then I don't have to care that it's required in the form. I don't have to do validation. I don't have to write form markup.
I would agree, but I think my problems come in the fact that like I don't like mixing HTML concerns into my, I generally keep the schema near the collection that it's kind of, you're building out the schema for. And so they're in that same file. And I feel like I'm with quick form or with auto form, like you're defining HTML concern right there in your simple schema. And that just doesn't feel quite right to me. And then my other problem is just figuring out like the separation of concern and knowing where to look in the documentation. You know, you've got three different sets of docs that you're kind of pouring through and trying to find which one actually cares about this bit that you're working on. And, you know, is this a collection two concern or is this a auto form concern or, oh, turns out the documentation was actually in simple schemas docs. So,
yeah, I definitely agree with that, especially when you get into, I've done a fair amount. And I think one of the areas where auto form is kind of nice is that it doesn't seem like it's extensible, that you can shoehorn in like file uploads or like, you know, really custom controls, but you can.
Yeah.
It's a little bit, it's not super easy to do so. But when you start kind of pushing the boundaries of what it's capable of, then you definitely get into pain points of, you know, where, why is this happening? You know, what's going wrong with this custom thing that I'm trying to build? And you're kind of scattered across these packages trying to figure out what part's going wrong.
Yeah. I would definitely say though, I mean, I don't know. I mean, for all my complaints at the end of my last training class, we decided to time box 15 minutes to see if we could get like profile picture uploading going on. And I used auto form and simple schema and collection FS. And I was able to get it like all glued together. We got it done in like 14 minutes. And, you know, I don't know. That's still pretty dang impressive considering I'd never written that code before. So I guess it's a good one.
There should be, it'd be interesting to see if someone built another forms package to integrate with Simple Schema and kind of get different inputs on that as well.
Yeah.
You know, I actually think that, you know, if you look at the three of them, like which I don't think auto form is the problem. And I don't really think that, you know, it's either simple schema or collection two, and probably collection two with like the, how auto values work and some of the extra functionality that it puts is like the, probably the weakest one of the bunch. I mean, like I really haven't had, I've had some bugs with auto form, like with, you know, auto saving forms that they don't work right or they refresh the page or they do something I don't want them to do. But mostly it's kind of pain points around, like calculated values and things like that.
Yeah. I found myself getting a little nervous sometimes too, because things seem a little too magical sometimes with auto forms. And yeah, that sits uneasy with me. But again, that's when you're getting more into performance and stuff and bigger budgets, you can dive into that stuff.
Yeah. I don't, so does auto form have a way to like switch away from bootstrap classing? Has anyone tried that?
Does it? It does.
Okay.
Yeah. I haven't done it.
Yeah.
I'm a bootstrap man. This is a bootstrap house over here.
Yeah, I can't stand bootstrap.
Yeah, I haven't built any forms in Meteoric yet, but the app I'm working on is Meteoric, so that's kind of why I asked. All my data comes from Drupal.
Fun. Drupal.
What about, did you say a package, Ryan?
No, I didn't yet. You guys pretty much covered them.
Oh, that's a cop out. Come on.
I'll tell you. Relax. I like a lot of utility stuff that just like takes thinking out of the process. So like simple schema is priceless in terms of just managing the flow of data. Like If you've ever built a Meteor app where you didn't have a schema or something, like after a certain point, it just becomes like you got to quit. So that's a big one. I'm also a big fan of Percolate Synced Cron, I think that's what it's called, for doing scheduled jobs and stuff. So it's nice for automating a lot of stuff. And then last slot would have to go to something from Arinota, but I'm not sure which one. It's either SSR has helped me a lot, his server-side rendering stuff.
Yep.
Or what else from him? NPM. Just something simple like that, where it makes it very easy to quickly add, you know, NPM packages to your stuff. I like to keep it fairly lean and not have too many outer dependencies. And
hey, Brian, can you talk a bit on what's that one package you have? Meteor Chef Base. Is that what it's called?
Is that a package?
It's not a package. It's basically just a starter kit for Meteor. So it gives you stuff like Bootstrap and, you know, a couple of different libraries like SSR, Browser Posse, basically all the stuff you need to just start building an app with Meteor. It's one of, yet again, one of the many Bootstrap kits that exist for starting a Meteor app. But the only package that I've really worked on lately is BERT, which is my favorite. It's an alert system for your Meteor app, and it's all based around BERT from Sesame Street. So check that out if you need an alert system. It's pretty cool.
And next week, the Big Bird package.
Well, there's plans for Ernie for handling server-side stuff, so we'll see if that comes together.
Nice. That's awesome. Love it.
Yeah, you guys mentioned, or you mentioned Synced Cron. I love that package. That was, you know, a big pain point for previous apps that I built. That it's pretty common to have kind of this processing component to an application, and that's difficult to scale when you're going to add, if you're going to be on something like Modulus and have multiple nodes. Like, you don't want, if you got this batch process that's sending out emails every night, people are going to be pissed if they get two or three emails. So Synced Cron works really well for that.
You know, it's interesting you say that, because I worked on a Percolate project at Meeting Hero, and they had used Synced Cron, but the problem was it would run every hour just to send notification emails about upcoming meetings. And every time, we ended up having to move that thing off to its own server, because every time it would kick off and run, it would hit like 100% CPU utilization and just kind of like drag down the boxes that it was running on.
That is, you know, you think about like a server side process, and a client I was working with recently, we built this kind of data syncing routine, and we had kind of the same thing, that it would, the Meteor app, like the website or the web portion of it, you'd hit refresh in the browser and it would just choke and sit there and spin forever. And we actually, there's a new package that I've been playing with, I forget what it's called. It's like a Meteor Sleep, that it actually allows you to insert a sleep statement into synchronous server-side code, so you don't have to use timeouts and intervals. If you have, like, probably what you're talking about, you've got, like, you know, you're going to get all these thousands of users and send, like, one email to each through them, and you're going to go through this, you know, iterate over this structure. And this is nice to kind of put in a delay in there of even 100 milliseconds to kind of pause the execution to let the web layer respond and keep executing efficiently. So it's not ideal, but I think that's sort of an inherent problem in node applications in general, is that it's very easy to have a very fast running process on the server side that kind of monopolizes your server capacity.
Yeah. I mean, so after I left Differential, like, we kept talking about it while I was working there, but after I left, they started working on their workers package, which I think is also an interesting approach, right? And the idea is that it's almost like, I feel like we could probably just fork Velocity and use their setup and probably get something running as well, because they have these soft mirrors, and essentially it's just a copy of your application that's running. And I think they turned off, like, so it doesn't respond to any web requests. But it could, you know, it was still your same code base. And basically you could tell it to run the worker queue and pull jobs off and get those running. And for me, like, I'm a fan of that stuff should be handled elsewhere. I think it makes scaling a little easier. You don't have to worry about, you know, if you're doing some kind of blocking IO or something that's going to chew up your node process, you don't have to worry about node not responding to web requests or DDP requests just because you're doing some kind of heavy computation in the back end or something. So I don't know. I still want to investigate that more. I've got an app that I tried to build called Sorting App, and crunches Twitter list data and makes suggestions for putting people into lists for you. And I really wanted that to be have some kind of background job in it, but I haven't touched it in a year. So love to get back to that.
Dude, I need that.
Everybody needs that because Twitter does a shitty job at helping you build lists.
Yeah. And lists are pretty powerful.
They are.
So like powerful. Filter out the noise. Yep. There's a lot of noise.
Well, and it turns out like a lot of human beings do that for you. That's where the idea for the app came from, because I can look up your Twitter account and all the lists that you're in, and I can pull out a keyword and figure out that, you know, you talk about two or three different things, right? Like you talk about Meteor and family and Goodnight Brew books.
Hey, I'm really happy to see that it's like it's sitting right next to you.
Yeah,
that means a lot.
Yeah.
It's perfect to put it like your beer right on, right?
Yeah, it's got beer rings on top.
It's a massive coaster.
Yeah.
So like wrapping up, I wanted to finish this a little bit different this week. One, I wanted to ask the audience something. I wanted to get their feedback on a few things. And then two, I really like JavaScript Jabbers and a couple other podcasts that those coder guys do. And they always have just like a wild card thing where like everyone on talking talks about something that they appreciate or liked the past week. It's like, I totally want to do that because like Mr. Golden Ryan over here, I'm sure he has a lot of adventures walking down the sidewalk, being all 6 foot tall and golden.
Constantly.
Yeah. People probably come up and lick you all the time or something like that, right?
Yeah, I think they have like
a Oscar trophy.
Yeah. He's got that sign in the background that says no. Say no. Yeah.
Just say no.
Say no. I have to constantly remind myself.
But anyway, so audience, I wanna ask you guys, I want you guys to comment really quick. What are you guys thinking about like Meteor conferences and larger events where like people can come together and we can actually see like hang out face to face instead of, you know, all these virtual stuff or chat rooms and all that stuff? You know, we kind of took a poll and we're throwing around some ideas in the Meteor Club Slack room, and no like official conference, but we're talking about what was one of them, Josh, the camp?
Yeah. So, well, I actually did. All right, fine. I'll talk about this.
Boom, did it.
Twitter. If you want to respond on Twitter, because we still don't have the website. Maybe it'll be up, maybe not.
Yeah, absolutely. I don't know
if we'll have comments. We'll probably throw a discus on there or something.
Or Crater.
Well, there's a thread on Crater, right? And that's what kind of brought it to the forefront. Like I had been thinking about it, and I know I talked to Ben and Ryan about this, like, you know, let's do MeteorConf 2015. And then I reached out to Matt and he said, let's hold off. Like, you know, they're making some strategic hires that they want to get involved in the process and that kind of thing. So we're kind of holding off on that and trying to figure out, you know, how to get that going. And in the meantime, I know I had talked to you a while ago, Ben, about doing like some kind of weekend getaway in Indianapolis. And I don't know, like, is that too far for you, Nate?
You don't know what it is, but you have to come.
No, I mean, it's not. I mean, I wouldn't drive.
Yeah. But they've got a good airport. That's kind of why I picked it. And it's halfway between Cincinnati and Chicago, sort of. We found...
And the like, world revolves around Josh and I, so...
Yeah, totally. Well, I mean, it does if we're running this thing, right? And so we found this awesome, like, 100-acre property, 100-acre woods. And so Christopher Robin's going to be there and Winnie the Pooh. No, just kidding. But seriously, they have like a little campground there and they've got a cabin. They have multiple cabins that sleep a lot of people. And they have this so bizarre. I think they have their own airport.
Whoa.
A runway. And where they normally store the plane, they can move the plane out and set it up as like a workroom and put a bunch of tables out. And, you know, we could put out power and that kind of thing and have like a weekend kind of unconference and hacking and, you know, all that kind of stuff. And I think that would be very awesome. And, you know, so I was thinking like 30 to 50 people just start on a Friday and on a Monday morning, and like everybody gets back on a plane and heads home type of thing.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. And like, would it be totally disconnected from the internet?
You know, I don't know. I haven't called the people yet to find out if they have internet there. Preferably,
I think that would be awesome.
Preferably not, actually. I mean, if we're going to be doing hacking and stuff, I mean,
you have to write your packages on paper.
Yeah.
We just have them all, have all the packages available.
There are existing instances of this kind of thing happening in the Rails community. So if you look up Rails Camp, it's kind of along the same lines. And yeah. There's a good article.
So if you guys are interested, definitely like throw a comment down or hit us up on Twitter. Like, let's get the conversation going.
Yeah.
And then the other one is hackathons. I want to see like a exclusive Meteor hackathon coming on. And just like we had Meteor Day, like we could make this a multi-city thing, get some prize money involved. Or have it be really small, but I'm wondering why I haven't seen any Meteor hackathons. So, like, that's the other thing I want to hear from the community.
We'll call it Meteor Mashup. Okay. I don't know. What do you think? No? Not working?
Crickets.
Crickets. I tried. Yeah, so I always like that stuff, too, because I did Rails Rumble the first year it was out, and we took first place. That was awesome. But it turned out it wasn't as big of a deal back then. Their later versions like got up on TechCrunch and stuff. I think that stuff awesome. I would actually say I'd rather not have a Meteor one, right? Like I'd rather come into any old hackathon, bring Meteor in, and then blow away all the competition because I can build things way faster.
Well, yeah, and so like there's some people in the club that are doing that. So
yeah, like DC and stuff. Mm-hmm. I don't know, have you guys done any hackathons?
No,
I haven't.
No, all
right. We invited the wrong people. Jeez.
I guess
so. This is the cornerstone of the conversation right here. I'm just kidding. I love you guys. So let's wrap it up. Like, let's do a round robin of like appreciation or something cool that we came across this last week or so. It doesn't have to do anything with coding, or it could have everything to do with programming. But yeah, let's hit it off. Ryan, I'm gonna have you do it since you hit me up first for the packages.
Something I've been into lately is I've been hit or miss. Some people know him, some people don't. But watching a lot of stuff on Uncle Bob Martin, who does a lot of the agile programming stuff, and watching his talks. And I picked up his book, Clean Code. I've been kind of working my way through that. He's a pretty technical guy, but he'll teach you a lot about structure and architecture and, you know, building bigger stuff in an organized way so it doesn't drive people nuts.
All right.
Very cool. How about you, Nate?
So I have like a newborn baby at home, so there's not been a whole lot of free time lately. But
so you appreciate sleep.
Yeah.
Well, I miss, shout out to kids. I miss it. It's my old friend I haven't seen in a while. So I guess the only thing that, you know, of late, I guess, you know, it's a little more like coding related. Upload Care as a service. I've been liking that a lot. I've used File Picker for a long time and got kind of upset with their recent price hike and like feature reduction. So I switched over to Upload Care and have been pretty happy with that for recent apps, and works pretty well for doing like photo uploads. They have a great little plugin to do like cropping right when things are uploaded, and it's so much nicer to actually just deal with like a URL and do like on-demand image conversion right from your markup. So I like that. It's a nice time saver for user submitted photos.
Nice.
Cool.
Very cool. Josh Rue, man.
I would say for me, I actually emailed this person too and told them, but I've been appreciating Meteor Interviews. .com.
Yeah.
Super cool. I don't know. I, you know, it's funny. Like I don't I don't consume my own stuff, right? Because I guess I was there when it was recorded. But you know, I really, really, really enjoy Meteor stuff, and I mean, I think that's maybe obvious, but yeah, it's just been, there's like a dearth of other kind of material out there, and for me, like I go running 3 or 4 times a week if I can, and I consume like, you know, Gary Vaynerchuk and Startups for the Rest of Us and Build and Launch. But the you know, now that Meteor Interviews has come out, I like that I'm starting to get some other Meteor material into my podcast rotation, I guess. So big shout to Paul Dowman, who was on last week. Really appreciate everything he's doing and pushing that forward. So
yeah, great guests and great questions. I definitely like that too. And he's my boss, so I a little bit. Man, Paul, you're doing such an awesome job, man.
Collusion.
It's like, I think it's like the second best podcast out there. So since I had the most time to think about it, I'm going to like say 2, and I'm going to totally cheat. But the first one is, I was looking for co-working places here in Chicago recently, and freaking head above shoulders was 1871. Amazing. Amazing place. If you guys don't know what it is, a lot of people probably don't, but man, 1871.com, check it out. It's like a nonprofit that is kind of ran by the state, actually. And man, they like open it up for like, they try to do everything that they could to introduce you to the right people and tons of things for free. And yeah, totally amazing. So that's number one, man. You guys are doing great. Number two, oh my gosh, I'm freaked out about this. Have you guys seen crystalnose.com?
No.
No.
No?
Nose as in like nose, or like nose like I know
K-N-O-W. Okay. Like, oh, Crystal knows you.
He Crystal Node. Whoops.
You know, I saw this and kind of
holy cow. So I got an invite yesterday, and I got in and I started looking up all you guys. And I know some things. Ryan, you should be ashamed of yourself.
Why is that?
No, I'm just joking.
I am ashamed of myself.
Holy cow. The freakiest thing is like, I'll email each of you guys what it says about you, and you'll be blown away. It talks about how you should have a conversation with someone.
Oh, wow.
Dude, it is like freaky. It had my profile at 59%, and I was reading it. I was like, holy shit. If someone did this, they'd be my best friend right away. This is not cool. Like instant rapport. So yeah, really impressive.
Huh. This is crazy. I wonder where they get all this data.
Yeah.
They must mine Twitter or something. I don't know.
I think so. Yeah. And a few other things.
Yeah.
But anyway, so yeah, that's my stuff. All right, guys. Well, Josh, you want to do a sign out? You got anything special you want to say? Or?
Yeah, just, you know, I mean, if you guys enjoy this conversation again, I would say sign up for the Meteor Club mailing list. I've done a terrible job this month at managing it as I've been focusing on other things, but going to get back to sending out emails. You know, you can hear about all this kind of stuff going on. And, you know, if you really want to like be at the source of it, I would say the Slack chat room. So if you go to Patreon, patreon.com/Meteor Club, you can sign up for the $10 level and get in the Slack chat room. And that's where quite a few of these conversations, originate. And everyone that's on this show is in the chat room as well. So, I think it's well worth it. And I love seeing all the amazing things that continue to come out of there. So
absolutely. It's amazing. I love it a little too much.
Yeah.
But we have all the Meteor authors in there.
Yeah. Yeah.
Chris isn't in there. We got to get Chris in there.
Chris Mather.
Yeah.
Yeah. We'll see about that. I don't know how much he gets on Slack, but
yeah, he might not be Slack, but I'm impressed with the lineup
we got our first Meteor developer in there as well with Sashko last night.
Oh, MDG.
Yeah.
You're like our first Meteor developer. What?
Yeah, none of us are. All right, guys. Well, thanks for coming on the show. Really appreciate it.
Absolutely. Thanks for having us.
Yeah, thank you.
This podcast has been a Meteor Club production. You can find out more information about Meteor Club at meteorjs.club. It's pretty easy to join the mailing list and stay in the loop. Again, that's meteorjs.club.